Ross Atkins is with us on the program. Hello, sir. What's up?
Hey, Scotty Mac. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me on this morning. How are you doing today?
We're hanging in. I've got a hideous, bright Hawaiian shirt on, so that's about where we've reached. I look like a mountain man, by the way. My hair is long. My beard is untrimmed. Are you looking professional still, or have you totally let yourself go? What's the look these days?
Yeah, I mean, I've used a razor, but the hair's a little bit longer these days.
That's pretty serious, a razor. That's the most we've heard in the last 2 months.
Some of us haven't. How do you feel, Ross, about the work your team has done here over the last few days? I mean, I know the months and months of work go in advance, but how do you feel about the draft haul that you guys just acquired?
Man. We feel great. Yeah, we really do. I think, you know, it's been very challenging, obviously, going, you know, having the draft occur during a pandemic and doing everything virtually is obviously, we'll take the challenge, but it hasn't been easy. But our group really came together well. Shane Farrell did a great job. You know how strongly we feel about Tony LaCava and how often we talk about his leadership and influence. The group that, you know, obviously there was upwards of 100 people that had influence and input into our process. But the group in and around Austin Martin, you know, led by Nate Murray, our area scout there, and Pauly T and Spider, Paul Tunnell and Michael Youngberg, so those guys, historically, the information we had around Austin Martin from Matt Bischoff, knowing him as a high school player, to our relationships and ties to Vanderbilt, our respect and communication with Tim Corbin, our current employees and Gil Kim and Matt Bushman, who have history there, who both attended Vanderbilt and played under Tim Corbin. Had a lot to do with this acquisition in our first round selection, and we are, elated about the process. So feel very good about it.
Ross Atkins is a general manager of the Blue Jays, and he's with us on Leadoff Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I think the average fan, Ross, would be interested in the process, right? So for however long you are general manager of the Blue Jays, through the years you will draft players, and people will look back and say, Ross was the GM when X player got taken. You just listed a whole handful of names who are involved in the process of getting that player, of ultimately selecting that player. But I'm interested in how the final decision is made. Is it, if there are 10 people in the room, just to use a round number, and four feel strongly about one player, and two feel strongly about another, and three others feel strongly about a guy, and then there's one who feels strongly about someone else. How do you get to the point where you hone in on a particular guy? Because ultimately, the responsibility is going to fall in your lap. How does that process play out? What does it look like?
Yeah, it's a great question, Scotty. And you've heard us talk a lot about collaboration. You also heard us talk a lot about empowerment. So we believe strongly in hiring. And, you know, when you hire someone, based on your values, it's going to believe in, doing things the way that our group believes in doing them. And we were excited to hire Shane Farrell and excited to hire Charlie Montoyo, excited to hire Gil Kim. And when we hire them, we hired them to do the job. So it is Shane Farrell's call. Having said that, man, it is, we are all in on the process. So, you know, just as when we hired Charlie Montoyo to write a lineup, we want him to do that, but a part of the process of hiring him is that he's using every resource to make the best decisions possible. So, and ultimately our hope is that we hope our leaders aren't having to break ties and make a call within, you know, minutes on their own. Obviously it's different for every role, and there's going to be, depending on the magnitude of a decision, there's going to be real time decisions where you need agility. But in the case of a first round selection, we've made those decisions well before the actual communication occurs or the action occurs, and we walk through all the hypotheticals so that we can as a group can understand that we're aligned and what we're going to do when we have to push go. And we were all aligned and felt very good in about making that decision, and again talked about how excited we were to make that decision, but ultimately it's a scouting director's call.
Yeah, Austin Martin, you picked with the fifth spot and rated number two, right, with America's prospect rankings. Were you guys surprised at all that he kind of fell to that fifth spot?
Yeah, I would just say we were excited. We were very excited that he was there for us because how much we value him and how much excitement our group had about the player, all the things I said earlier, the work that was done. The draft every year is a little bit different. This year was obviously very different. A lot less beef jerky and a lot less peanuts. we were not sitting in a room having every single meal together for 30 days.
That's right. Yeah. And Austin Martin is a Scott Boras client. And I don't know what it is, Ross. It feels, and maybe we're just hypersensitive here in Toronto, it feels like the moment we get a guy, the conversation among some of the talking heads immediately pivots to signability and can the Blue Jays lock this guy in? Are you confident that Austin Martin will be locked into a contract before the deadline here in August?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we wouldn't draft the player if we didn't feel we had a solid chance to acquire them. Having said that, because it is an ongoing negotiation, it's something that I just don't want to comment on the specifics of it. But that is, something that we factor in before we make that decision, obviously.
With Ross Atkins, Blue Jays GM. Last one for you on Austin Martin. The commissioner announced him as a shortstop when he was drafted. What do you envision for Austin? Because if you listen to the people who know him, they'll tell you there's really no place on the field he can't play.
Yeah, I think you said it well, Scotty. We'll see. I think he's excited about his versatility. He's excited about his ability to play multiple positions, and being in the middle of the diamond is an incredible start. So, we'll partner with the player and talk to the player about that and work through first and foremost what's best for his transition into professional baseball and joining the Toronto Blue Jays organization, and then secondarily, we'll focus on how he complements our team. But we definitely don't want to get down that road until we can partner with the player in doing that.
Visiting with Ross Atkins, Blue Jays GM, on Leadoff. So we don't yet know, Ross, and in fact, we're at this point, I think, crossing our fingers that there will be a major league season. What we do have a pretty good handle on is that the minor league seasons have been, almost completely compromised at this point. And so with that knowledge, you can move forward as an organization in your planning. How do you guys intend, and all 30 teams are dealing with this, but how do you guys intend to ensure that lost development time is mitigated as best as possible, given that so many of your highly thought of young players aren't going to have affiliated ball to play in this summer?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, like we're in a pandemic, right? And that's stating the obvious here. So there are still rules around us getting together as an organization and putting people in clubhouses. And until that starts to ease a bit, we're focused on what we can do in mostly in isolation and how we're helping guys continue their process, and been thinking about the different contingencies and how we will maximize the opportunities then. So we're also focused on solutions as an industry, not
you know, not just as a Toronto Blue Jays organization, working with other GMs and other farm directors on things that we can do to make the most of this situation that obviously is a challenging one. And on the state of minor league baseball, it's just, you know, that's not for, as Rob Manfred has said, and, you know, that's not for us to decide. You know, that is a decision that will be made by minor league baseball. And so this is, you know, we're in a very challenging situation right now. And, you know, we feel incredible about the resources that we have, having built out the performance staff that we have, on having so many opportunities to continue education, continue thinking about just human performance and growth and development in individual ways. But, you know, having said that, we are very much looking forward to being on baseball fields again.
Do you think there's any benefit to keeping some of the prospects up? Say this, you guys do come back and it's, you know, whatever, 60, 70 games. I was trying to make this case to Scotty where in hockey, you know, bringing up, you know, guys like a taxi squad is something that helps players really develop. They get to, you know, be in practice with guys, be or hang around them in the room. And it really helps their development. And there's, I don't know baseball as well as hockey. And that's what I was kind of wondering, is that something that can help young players develop into, you know, a pro player that you see them, you know, their full potential?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we'll see based on the rosters and what the rules end up being. But we have absolutely talked about that. And, you know, let's say the number ends up being 55 or 60 players that we can use that are our depth for the season this year. You know, we will definitely be thinking about development opportunities as long as we feel like our depth is covered and we are certain that we're doing everything we can to win baseball games.
With Ross Atkins, Blue Jays GM, and we know if there's a season, Ross, it will be on the shorter side, not anywhere close to 162. Now, my math is terrible, but I can count enough to know that let's use the number you just threw out there. Let's just actually give ourselves a bit of wiggle room to work with. 50 to 60 games. So a sprint. More than a marathon, a severely truncated season. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what if like a guy like Hyunjin Ryu makes 10 starts? And what if a guy like Nate Pearson is on the team all season long and makes 10 starts? And what if Matt Shoemaker stays healthy and pitches for you guys the way that he did in the 5 or 6 starts he made before the unfortunate situation with his knee in Oakland late last April? All of a sudden, I'm counting more than half the games started by those guys, and we haven't even gotten to one of your marquee free agent signings in Tanner Roark and Chase Anderson and possible other contributors. I know you're not going to at all sacrifice the long term for the now, but a shortened season creates a lot of really interesting possibilities in terms of speeding up the contention window, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've been focused on building a winning team and a winning organization and feel that we have made incredible progress towards that. We have an exciting young core, a very good farm system. We've complemented that young core in free agency via trade as well in the last offseason and the one prior. So really excited about, you know, some of the, you know, guys that don't get as much discussion as Kevin Biggio and Vladdy and Bo, and then the Hyunjin Ryu and the names that you mentioned as well. And, you know, having added Teoscar Hernandez to the organization and feel very, very good about the chances of, you know, all of these guys, you know, from, you know, Derek Fisher to Anthony Alford to Jonathan Davis and Randall Grichuk, Teoscar Hernandez. All of them aren't going to become stars that are household names and everyone remembers, you know, 30 years from now and talking about this era of the Blue Jays. But one or two of them are going to really stand out beyond the names that everyone's talking about. And this young core is an exciting one that, you know, we feel very, very strong about, obviously. So, you know, this year, where we are as it relates to competitiveness, we go into it. I'm obviously very optimistic, but we felt good about going into a 162-game schedule. So when you shorten the window, that the level of depth and experience becomes there's a little bit less pressure on it. But that goes the case for other organizations as well. So it's difficult to hedge and think about how much that increases your competitive window or just makes it better. But we feel very good about the group that we've put together and that's going to be here for some time.
If they do shut the border down still and they make it, they're making everyone quarantine for the 14 days, obviously you guys will have to go down, play in Dunedin. Is that going to be any kind of disadvantage for you guys, or is there still talk that you might be able to, play at Rogers Center?
Yeah, obviously we would like to be playing here, and we'll see. We'll see on when it starts and what happens with the border. That is certainly not within our control. And then we'll focus on, the opportunities in front of us, the challenges in front of us, and do everything that we can to maximize them. So if we aren't able to play here, the contingencies that are in place, we'll make the most of and focus on things we can control.
Ross Atkins is the general manager of the Blue Jays. And Ross, before we let you go, the commissioner at the start of the draft the other night announced a call to action. We have obviously watched over the last couple of weeks with sadness, and then I suppose even as we've moved along here with optimism, that there will be a more recognizably equal world as we move ahead, this after the brutal murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And all 30 franchises are making donations, and baseball officials, yourself included, are making donations to charities promoting equality and diversity. You have selected the Equal Justice Initiative and Tropicana Community Services. Share with us what you have experienced, what you have felt over the last couple of weeks, and why those two charities matter to you.
Yeah, it's been powerful. And, it really has, to see how quickly the group came together. It's also obviously been very emotional because this is, it's just not a situation that, we've done enough on. So just as leaders in baseballs, we felt a responsibility to address the injustices that are faced by the Black community and condemn racism in all its forms. So, as a group, the initiative led by the executives was we chose Black Lives Matter to call attention to the problem of racial injustice and United for Change to symbolize a way forward, personally and professionally. It was important to support the charities that promote racial equality, both in Canada and the U.S. As we know, it has no borders, and racism has no borders. And, my wife and I wanted our donation to go to charities that we felt we spent time talking about and felt that were worthwhile in both countries. And Jay's Care matched the foundation in Canada. Mark matched my contributions. The commissioner's office in Major League Baseball matched all of our contributions, and very quickly, within 48 hours, well over $1 million was donated. I think, obviously money is important, but the solidarity was what was so powerful, I think, amongst us, and recognizing that we've got a lot of work to do. We've got to do better. We've had a lot of very positive dialogue in our organization, amongst our staff, amongst our players, with all of baseball operations and business operations, and we will continue that dialogue. I think first and foremost, we're just thinking about how we can listen and learn, because we haven't done enough, and we have an incredible platform to do more. So it's been really, really powerful to speak to some of our players and to hear the open nature of the dialogue on a very, very uncomfortable topic that we quite frankly need to have just more dialogue on and be open you know, I think in sport oftentimes we do see the platform used with armbands, with people riding on shoes, with signage. And we've got to keep that dialogue going. It can't be something that happens for weeks or even for months. It has to become our existence where we're doing more for change.